Chapter 26. Hilo. Dolorum wiped the pretend sweat from his brow. Pass me the skill saw trace, or whatever you're called. The old master had ditched his geeky persona, now morphed into a plump biker with a tanned head and a graying goatee. The detail was amazing. Every hair, every wrinkle, every imperfection a perfection. It's Hilo, Trace reminded him. During his day-long motorcycle ride back to Phoenix, Archon Ramus had sent him an impersonal email informing him he had graduated from training and had been accepted by Arcus Magdalene into full operational status in the Gabriels. Arcus Magdalene had at least favored him with a congratulatory phone call. She even asked him what he wanted his Ash Angel name to be. Hilo. He had picked it early. Now he had to get people to use it. Cassandra would likely call him Jarhead until one or the other of them got killed or ascended, but in his own mind, he had reached a dearly bought milestone. Stepping into Hilo meant more distance from a past he was sprinting away from. It was their second day repairing the Redemption Motorcycle Club, the damaged building healing board by board in the bright Phoenix sun. Trace handed the saw to Dolorum and went to grab the level. Trace couldn't shake the nagging feeling someone had pressured Ramus into letting him graduate. Mars was his first guess. But Trace doubted Archon Ramus would elevate him out of training just because Mars said so. The two men could hardly stand each other, and Ramus didn't seem cowed by Mars's superior rank. Arcus Magdalene could be persuasive, but Ramus had already shown he wouldn't cave in to her recommendations. The only other benefactor Trace could think of was Diarchus Joan, who took his side during the debrief. All considered, he didn't care. He had graduated, and he wanted his Halo sword pin. As for an assignment, Arcus Magdalene informed him he would remain on Cassandra's team along with Goldbow and Corinth. Marching orders would come in a week. When he hung up with Magdalene, he had raised his arms and whooped. Dolorum offered his not-so-sincere congratulations and then put him to work collecting debris from the wrecked club. With tireless bodies and combined gifts, they cleared the rubble in less than 24 hours, hauling the garbage into a dumpster delivered during the day. They salvaged what they could. Repairing the busted garage door and frame would take a day. Trace doubted a week would see the mangled chapel anywhere close to done. But Dolorum plowed into the project with vigor and enthusiasm, and Trace tried to keep up. Dolorum sawed the board and then handed it to Trace. I've invited some of the members of my flock over this evening so I can continue the real work of Ash Angels, which is to save souls. I know your cover is Jason Storm, the computer guy, but you may want to at least put on some facial hair for my little sheep. They are a colorful lot, with more troubles between them than the Middle East, but our gifts can be used to make people's lives better. Getting rid of dreads doesn't have to be done with bullets and hearts burned in a fire. We can get rid of dreads by creating people who would never do anything to deserve becoming one. Colorful didn't cover it. 13 of Dolorum's flock showed up driving an array of street bikes, choppers, bullet bikes, and even street-legal dirt bikes. Tattoos, do-rags, shaggy beards, sacramental whiskey. In a haze of cigarette smoke, they gathered around Dolorum, a swarm of black leather offering condolences and committing themselves to find whoever had wrecked the place and kicking their asses until kingdom come. Dolorum reminded them of mercy and forgiveness and passed out the power tools. For 2 days, Hilo rubbed shoulders with Dolorum's congregation. He learned their names. They shared their struggles. They were addicts and ex-cons, deadbeat parents, the ignorant and uneducated. And they all loved motorcycles. Save souls, not slaughter dreads, Dolorum said. He'd put his motto to practice and his Ash Angel gifts to work. On the bus, Dolorum used Pacify to turn the dreads from their violent purpose. At the Redemption Motorcycle Club, he used it to console a brute of a man brought to tears by losing his child in a custody hearing. After each work session, he used Inspire to convince his sheep to mend their ways and repair the wrongs they had done. When the night fell, Dolorum hugged each broken man and woman, and offered words of encouragement. "So what do you think, Trace?" Dolorum asked after the work crew left. They stood in the mostly empty garage, now with a functioning door. "About the ministry?"
"Yes."
"I can see your point," Hilo conceded. "You are doing good work with these people. It feels right. But you can't ignore what the Dreads are doing. It's not just ones and twos anymore." "We old masters don't ignore them," Dolorum explained, crossing to the cabinet and pulling out the katanas they'd used to hack up the Dreads a few nights before. "I believe, however, that the Ash Angel organization has forced them to become organized as a matter of survival. That's why they have become more powerful. The ways of the old masters have been around since the first Ash Angel, the disciple John. They are, I think, the ways the Almighty intended for Ash Angels to work." Dolorum tossed him a sword and Hilo caught it.
"And how do swords figure in?"
"Well, not counting sturdy clubs, they are the most ancient of Dread fighting weapons, and one of the most effective if used properly. They are a bit impractical in the modern age, and if the Dreads are building guns of their own, then the sword's day may be done for good. But I want to show you how a particular bestowal works, though it is one of the rarer ones."
"How many bestowals do you have?" Trace asked.
6.
"So you're going to ascend? When is it?"
8 months from today. I am looking forward to it," he added. "I'm a bit tired of the game and would like a rest. I've been doing this for almost 50 years. But first, the sword. Do you remember how I gave you the ability to use the sword for a few hours?"
"Yes," Trace replied. "That was the impart bestowal, right?"
"Correct. Now, what you may not realize is that while the impart bestowal can be used to give a temporary gift, used properly, it can dramatically speed up learning a skill. That's what I want to show you over the next couple nights. The physical bestowals, like speed and strength, are always coveted, by men in particular. But these softer gifts, inspire, pacify, heal, impart, and bless, are wonderfully powerful and doing the true work of Ash Angels."
"But you don't get to choose which bestowals you get," Trace said.
"That's not necessarily true," Dolorum said, running his thumb along the blade. "That's the conventional wisdom. But there is some evidence that the circumstance and the desire of the Ash Angel play a role in which bestowal he or she gets. You are the perfect example. From what I've been told of your exploits saving Sapphire, you received a bestowal you desperately needed at the time. But even more telling, you received it far earlier than a blank is supposed to. This points to the hand of God being aware of your needs and providing for them. By introducing you to these other bestowals, I'm hoping to prime the engine in your head so you can start seeing where these gifts could benefit you and maybe, just maybe, influence the divine selection process."
"With swords?"
"Well, just as a demonstration. I love the things, and I don't want you to get the impression that I'm a pacifist, though there are Ash Angel groups that are. I'll take a Dread down whenever I can. I'm just not going to devote my life to doing it. Can you imagine the immeasurable good it would do for the world if you could take every Ash Angel who's filing papers at some desk job or who just sits around waiting for the call for another mission and put them out on the street preaching good and doing good? I think the world would be a much better place. And not just by a little. Killing Dreads and Shedim should be an occasional pastime, not a profession. That said, if you're going to kill a Dread, do it right, and with a little style if you can. I think you've got the style. Let me show you how to use Impart to do it right."
The technique was simple. Dolorum would give him the ability to do a specific skill for a brief amount of time. They would practice until the effect wore off, and then continue with another. A residue of the Impart would remain, solidifying the skill in his mind. Before the second night was out, Trace felt like a sword master. And he had to admit, flinging a sword around in precise, energetic moves felt satisfying. He almost suggested they go on a Dread hunt to try it out. but then he remembered who he was talking to. So, in the thick of things, Dolorum explained, I dumped my entire knowledge of sword fighting into your mind. When using Impart to aid in learning, you start with simple bits and pieces of the overall skill and reinforce it. And you can use this technique to teach just about anything, from cooking to how to defeat thought patterns that led to an addiction. If used properly, it can be one of the most powerful gifts an Ash Angel possesses. With 2 days remaining of Trace's vacation, but several days of chapel repair left, Dolorum told him to go enjoy the rest of his time off. As a gesture of thanks for Trace's help with the club, Dolorum gifted him one of his katanas and an old but powerful Harley street bike Trace thought 40 times cooler than the evil camper-laden truck the Ash Angels had dumped on him. Dolorum hugged him, then looked him in the eye. Come by again, he said. Come soon. There's more to learn about the real path of an Ash Angel. Hilo thanked him, straddled the Harley, and shot off down the road. Time to go home. Hilo's home. He stopped for a puzzle and junk food after outfitting himself with a helmet and some leather riding gear. Then it was back to apartment 3B. He hadn't set foot in his apartment for over a week. Mindy and Scarlet would demand an explanation. Thinking of his flirty neighbors set him to morphing back to normal, ridding himself of the weight, facial hair, and long locks he had worn at the Redemption Motorcycle Club. It still took too long. He pulled into the Sao Paulo apartment parking lot mid-morning, noticing a dark green puddle beneath his ridiculous truck. He hung his helmet on the handlebar and shoved his chaps in his leather saddlebags. A quick examination revealed that the radiator fluid had bled out. Maybe the truck had committed suicide. No matter. He was done with old Roaster. He would have it towed or soak it in gasoline, set it on fire, then dance around it like a savage until it burned to the ground. His apartment was just as he left it, and he wasted no time in starting his own graduation party, complete with root beer floats and a 3-sausage pizza that would have taken a year off a mortal's life. Delicious. He broke out the 1,000-piece puzzle of a helicopter with so much blue sky it would take forever to put it together. Before long, he was lost in a world of greasy meat, liquid sugar, and hunting down edge pieces. Teresa. He hadn't thought about Teresa for days. He sat back and stared at the piles of pieces. Puzzles had saved him from his darker thoughts in his mortal life. Now they served the opposite purpose. He considered dumping the mass of pieces back into the box, but a fit of stubbornness swelled within him. He was Hilo, and he would not let the broken pieces of the past keep him from putting them together now. He would face Teresa's betrayal. He would overcome it. He dove in and had the upper corner of blue sky finished when the knock he had expected all morning came. He opened it. Not Mindy and Scarlet. Cassandra with her supermodel looks. Red leather pants, black heels, and a diaphanous black shirt. Without being asked, she walked to the table, regarding it with an amused smile as she pulled off her sunglasses.
So you graduate and this is what you do? Pizza and a puzzle? Wow.
So, Hilo, that's the name, huh? She sat and sifted through the mound of edge pieces.
Yep. Can I make you a root beer float or get you a slice of pizza? I've got a truckload of chili in here, too.
No, thanks. So why Hilo?
Trace joined her at the table.
A Hilo is what brings you to the fight and what takes you out. I don't know. It kind of expresses that an Ash Angel, you know.
You thought it sounded cool.
Pretty much. How did the talk with Goldbo go?
She shook her head.
I suck at the whole relationship talk thing. I don't know if I made things better or worse. I don't think he understands what it means to feel betrayed like you and I do, Trace. I mean, if you had to explain to Teresa how you felt, what would you say? Do you think she would understand what she did to you?
Wow. That was more personal information than Cassandra had ever shared.
He leaned back in his chair and thought for a moment.
I don't think she would. I was pretty confused and angry at the time, but I think she saw what she had done as a speed bump, and I saw it as Mount Everest. I guess the hard thing is the nagging feeling that it was my fault and that I deserved it. I've really been trying to put it behind me. It has no place in this new life.
Cassandra nodded and leaned forward, crossing her arms on the table.
Do you think you could forgive her if you saw her again?
I don't know. I hope so.
She looked at him long and hard, eyes searching.
What is it? He asked.
This is hard, Hilo. You might have to do it. Face her, I mean.
His heart already didn't beat, but it seemed to go even more still.
What?
Listen carefully. I've been chewing on this all day, and I can hardly believe it myself. Those guns and the SUV you took from the Dreads have been pored over and analyzed. Making weapons and outfitting cars takes money. Anything that takes money can be traced. The weapons had no serials or clues to help us. The cars were pretty blank, too. No VINs or other identifying marks that might tell us where they were bought. But the SCOLIS researchers got lucky on some of the parts. In my law enforcement days, I didn't spend a lot of time accounting crimes. But clever people can hide purchases away and make one thing look like another. It took the computers and accounting experts at Deep 7 a couple days to tease it out. But the vehicles, and we suspect the parts for the weapons, were all bought through a bunch of dummy corporations. All those corporations are the clients of one prominent law firm. Gutra and Hudgens.
Trace tensed, face pinching. He kept waiting for Cassandra to say the whole thing was a joke. How could this be? He stood and went to the sink to get some water that his body didn't need, but his mind did. His eyes wandered everywhere but saw nothing.
I know, Cassandra sympathized. Now, I'm a coincidence rather than a fate kind of girl, but something about this whole thing smacks of divine providence or the devil's due. There are about 40 Gabriel teams out there who could field this job. Arcus Magdalene and I have been over it and over it all morning. This crazy coincidence or heavenly accident or whatever either means we're the ones who are supposed to take this job or we're the ones who should absolutely avoid it.
What's the job? Trace asked, returning to his seat. Can't they just hack in or something?
That's the thing, Trace, they can't. Apparently the IT department at Gutra and Hudgens is smart enough not to have their sensitive records accessible to the internet. That means getting someone on site and inside. We need to know if Gutra and Hudgens is the head of the snake, or if they are just working for whoever is. Do you remember seeing the man from the cemetery in the bar and grill at any of those company parties you went to?
No. But we don't need to involve Teresa in this.
She still works there. Yes, we checked. Simon is still there, too.
Trace's heart plummeted.
Are they?
We don't know much more than what I just told you, Cassandra said. On the one hand, your knowledge of the company and the people in it makes you an asset. On the other hand, your relationship with Teresa and Simon makes you a liability. Maggie and I couldn't decide what to do. I'm here to dump it in your lap. Take 24 hours to mull it over and call me.
She stood to go.
I'd stay and help with this puzzle, but Goldbo begged me to let him take me to some stupid dinner so we can talk about our stupid relationship and see if we can make some stupid progress. It shouldn't be this hard. It's just so...
stupid.
Exactly. Work on your morphing jar...
Hilo.
I'll try to get your name right, Jarhead, I swear.
Gutra and Hudgens. Teresa. Simon. He couldn't run away after all, no matter what his name was. Thoughts jumbled. He had barely closed the door behind Cassandra and sat down when another knock brought him back to the door. Hardly in the mood to entertain two college girls, he opened the door to find them pouting at him.
There you are, Jason, Mindy said, a hint of flirtatious accusation in her voice. Where have you been?
He opened his mouth, and his words died.
A red aura popped into the corner of his eye, stopping at the foot of the stairs to the second level. His heart leapt into his throat. Dahlia. He needed the girls gone, now. Just another business trip. Hey, I'd love to catch up, but another client is coming to see me. Mindy and Scarlett turned to take in the approaching woman, their eyes narrowing.
Do you only have gorgeous clients, Jason?
He laughed nervously. Just lucky, I guess.
Well, come see us when you're done. Apartment 1C, remember?
Got it. Dahlia, dressed in her waitress outfit from the Hammer Bar and Grill, waited until the two women moved off before standing in front of him. A soft breeze teased her long hair while her stoic face regarded him, eyes unblinking. Trace looked over his shoulder. His katana was under the couch. She wasn't armed, but if she could torch him.
We know where you live, Jason. It's about 10 minutes until sundown. Get out.
Why are you helping me? She looked away for a moment.
Why does he want you so badly?
Who?
The man who tried to drown you at the Hammer, she replied, words rushed. I can't tell you his name. He's had nothing on his mind since that night except gutting you. Look, I can't be here. Get out.
She jogged down the stairs to a still-running Honda Civic, laying on the accelerator as she arced out of the parking lot. Hilo donned his leather jacket and pulled his keys from the pocket. He couldn't endanger everyone in the complex by trying to make a stand. If the dreads were coming to hit him, they would have to find him again. He grabbed his sheathed katana and a duffel bag in the hall closet where he kept his BBG and some stingers. Swiping his phone off the kitchen counter, he dialed Cassandra.
Miss me, Jarlo?
She answered. I just had a nice little visit. You'll never guess from who.
Okay, well, don't keep me waiting here.
He went to the window and scanned the parking lot. Dahlia.
Really? Did she repent of letting you go and come to bash your head in?
No, she warned me that the dreads were going to hit me near sundown and then left. A cable van drove into the parking lot, the black and red aura of a dread thrall emanating from the driver's side window. Trace froze. Cassandra piped in.
Leave before they get there. Go now.
It's too late. They've sent a thrall. Her car brakes squealed in his ear.
Turn on every light in the place and hide as long as you can. I'm coming.
She hung up, and Trace darted around the apartment, flicking up switches. He spun in a slow circle. The dinky two-bedroom apartment provided no good place to hide. The door and the front window were the only exits. Both led straight to the thrall. Tactics. If he could deliver a crippling blow inside the apartment, the light would prevent the creature from healing. Twisting the blinds closed, he unsheathed his katana, concealing himself behind a wall near the entryway. Booted footsteps clanged up the grated metal stairs. The malevolent presence of the thrall, a presence inherited from its shedmaster, washed over him like a filthy sludge. Trace almost laughed when the thrall knocked politely. The apartment lights shimmered along the polished blade. He gripped it in two hands, knees bent. Two more knocks, and then silence. Wood squealed. The thrall leaned into the door, its strength buckling the wood around the handle, the locks popping under the pressure. Splintered chunks of the door and metal hardware shot out from the entryway and slid into the kitchen. It was in.
Cable guy,
the thrall said with a sardonic sneer. Hilarious. It kicked the door shut, wood fragments grinding underneath it. Trace stood stock still. One footstep, then another, and it cleared the edge wall. The swirling red and black aura befouled its white jumper. It even had a hat. Boosting his strength, Trace took one step forward and swung. His blade whistled cleanly through the thrall's midsection, top half clunking to the floor with a thud that would wake the downstairs neighbors. The disembodied legs stayed upright. Trace stepped back, but too slowly. A torsoless leg kicked his thigh with mule force and sent him sprawling backward onto the coffee table, shattering the cheap faux wood furniture. His sword bounced away. Trace scooted backward as the thrall's upper body powered toward him, arm over arm, fingers gripping the carpet. The stubbled head grinned at him with wicked pleasure. Flailing backward, nerves electric, Trace rammed into the couch. He had run out of living room. The thrall's orphaned legs strode up calmly behind as the torso's beefy hands grasped for his ankle. Trace kicked out, deflecting one reaching hand. The other surged forward, catching his lower leg and squeezing it with a powerful grip. Twisting, Trace tried to anchor himself to the couch arm to yank himself free, but the thrall was too strong, dragging the couch and Trace backward. Inch by inch, the torso pulled him back to where the legs waited to crush his ribs and smash his skull. Dusk saved him. From the table, his phone chimed to mark the setting of the sun. The dread thrall healed in an instant, the grasping torso disappearing and reappearing on top of the legs. Its momentary disorientation allowed Trace time to roll away and stand. They now stood face to face across the room. The katana lay on the floor to his right. The window waited on the left. If he could dive out, get to the motorcycle, and get it started, he could easily outrun the van on the street. The thrall's aura flared. No. Not a torch. Not now. Trace flung himself at the window, but the torching blast overtook him, and his purpose faded with his external vision. Tarissa's office at Gutra and Hudgens, replacing apartment 3B, and the thrall at his heels. Tarissa sat behind her dark mahogany desk, humming happily like she always did. Eyes lost in a daydream, she ran her fingers through her lustrous hair, other hand pressed to her heart. A wall of framed pictures sat clumped around her monitor, their backs to Trace from his vantage point in the doorway. Little rectangles hiding from him. Little windows inspiring Tarissa's pleasure. Fear coursed through him, numbing his soul. He knew it was on those pictures. Who was on them? Drawn like an addict to his heroin, he longed to satisfy some craving to be worthless so he could wallow inert in his own surrender. She moved her hand to touch her face. A wedding ring twice as big as the one he had slid on her finger over 3 years ago caught the sun. The pictures beckoned. Something pulled his vision down. Another picture, face down in the garbage, begged for his attention. He could turn it over. A desire for agony drove his hand forward. He willed it back and raised his head. Tarissa's eyes shone, her full lips pulled up in a contented smile. She was happy. He was happy for her. He couldn't explain how, but he was. The picture face down in the garbage was of a man dead and gone. Trace might resent her joy, but Hilo, the Ash Angel, could forgive. Hilo could say goodbye. Hilo could be free. Hilo found himself awkwardly sprawled on the couch, arms trapped beneath him, neck bent against the back cushion. The thrall had his ankle. With a hard yank, he freed it, anchoring his arms against the couch. He called on his strength and horse-kicked the thrall across the room and into the next, wallboard and 2x4s snapping under the thrall's inertia, a shudder rattling the room. It landed on its back on the bedroom floor. Trace snapped up the fallen katana as the thrall rose and bull-rushed him. Thought disappeared. With fluid movements, Trace spun away, bringing the blade down on the exposed backs of its legs, severing them. Limp, the thrall dropped. Without the pelvis, the legs twitched uselessly on the ground. Again, the creature used its arms to crawl at its prey. Trace jumped and crashed down on its back, sword point severing the vertebrae in its neck. He didn't hesitate. He hacked at the snarling thrall, chopping at it until only the fingers wiggled along the floor. With some well-placed stomping, it was over. Barring a power outage to bring healing darkness, the thrall was finished. The neighbors banged on the ceiling below him. Hilo sheathed his sword, grabbed his bag and phone, and bolted. On his way out, he wedged the door shut with a wood fragment and called the Ash Angel help number. They needed a cleanup team before the apartment manager got a nasty surprise. His next-door neighbor leaned out the window.
What the hell is going on in there? He was a young man with barely two brain cells to rub together, according to Mindy and Scarlet. "Just trying to unclog some plumbing," Hilo improvised. "Had to get into the walls. I'm done."
"Oh. Okay."
Hard to argue with a man carrying a sword. Hilo scanned the parking lot and checked the cable van. The thrall had left the driver in a broken heap in the back. Cassandra's hurtling car screamed into the parking lot. Trace jogged over as her window dropped. "The thrall is down. I've called in the burn team. They should be here in 10. She relaxed and sat back.
"I was afraid it would torch you and you'd be ash in a drain by now."
"It did. I got through it. I'll get set up in a hotel tonight. Get with operations and tell them we're going to Gutra and Hudgens. It's time to figure this out and put the burn on the dreads."
"Look at you," Cassandra said, doing just that. "Swords and motorcycles and a little attitude. Not bad, Hilo. Not bad at all."